Hello, and a warm welcome to you, dear listeners. Thank you for joining us on another episode of South Asia Chat, brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Dr. Imran, a consultant for the Institute. Today, we'll be speaking about religion, secularism, and the state in Bangladesh. Bangladesh is the third largest Muslim country in the world, and one of its most profound social and political challenges in its recent history has been its struggle against religious conflict, extremism, and violence. Islamist militancy is not a new phenomenon in Bangladesh. A number of Islamic militant groups have been operating in Bangladesh since the 1980s. What is new, however, is that Islamist militancy in the country now increasingly has international connections and relies on transnational networks and narratives. At the same time, Bangladesh, a country originally established as a secular state, now increasingly looks towards religion as a source of its national identity. Here to make sense of these complex developments and transformations for us today is Dr. Shafi Mustafa. Dr. Shafi is an adjunct lecturer at the University of New England in Australia, where he completed his PhD. He is also an assistant professor in the Department of World Religions and Culture at the University of Dhaka. Dr. Shafi is a frequent commentator on political developments in South Asia and the broader Muslim world. His scholarship has looked at the sociological and historical developments of political Islam in Bangladesh. Dr. Shafi, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for the invitation. And I'm happy to be part of this conversation.
Wonderful, thank you. So we'll get right to it. So the first question I wanted to ask you is, in South Asia, matters of religion and state are often ironic, if not paradoxical. Pakistan was created in the name of Islam, but remains in a form of government, which continues to be contested by religious groups who argue that the country is either too secular, un-Islamic, or not Islamic enough. India, on the other hand, was established as a secular state, but now seems to motion towards an explicit Hindu identity. Bangladesh was created as a secular nation in 1971, and secularism was initially established as one of four constitutional pillars. To what extent can Bangladesh now be considered a secular state?
Well, the British India actually was divided into Pakistan and India based on religiously motivated two nations theory. It is true to some extent that religious legacy is still dominant in the state policies, if not in the truly senses, but at least they have the populist motives. To what extent ruling elites are religious, that is highly contested. Now I am going back to your question, to what extent Bangladesh is a secular state. My plain and simple answer is Bangladesh is not at all a secular state. So it sounds very weird, but this is true. Look at, if you look at the Charles Taylor's A Secular Age book, which was published in 2007. And he's a Canadian philosopher. Actually, there are a lot of debate about the secularism. But if you see his book clearly identifies three types of secularism. The number one is structural secularism. Look at the France. The state has nothing to do with the religion. The state and religion is completely separated. And his second types of secularism is based on the level of religiosity. Look at the European countries. Although the England has its own state religion like the Anglican Church, but its people, they don't care about the religion. So it's a second type of secular society. And the third, obviously the third type is actually it accepts all types of voices, including atheism, including like look at the Australia. It doesn't matter if a person follows a religion or he follows the path to no religion. It doesn't make any difference. But if you look at this criteria, maybe Bangladesh falls under the third category, which accepts all religious voices. But if you see the recent development in Bangladesh, there is a Digital Security Act, and in which hurting religious sentiment is a crime, and it's up to 10 years imprisonment. So in no sense, Bangladesh is not at all a secular state. If I go back to the history a little bit, this current government which came to power, the Bangladesh Awami League government came to power in January 2009 with a massive support. And they actually, their election manifesto was to restore the 1972 constitution. And the 1972, as you mentioned in your introduction, that this country was basically emerged as a secular national state. And one of the principles of the state was secularism. And even in 2009, the people voted this government to restore the secularism. But what government did, government took a very ambiguous position. Like they restored the secularism to the constitution, but they still kept the secularism, Islam as a state religion. So it's a very ambiguous position. They on the one hand, they have keep their, their commitment. On the other hand, they have also used the popular support for the Islam. So it's a bit ambiguous position for the Bangladesh Awami League, but definitely Bangladesh cannot be considered as a secular state. And it's becoming more and more religious in other sense.
Thank you so much. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the political parties. So one of them being the Awami League. How have the two main political contenders for government, the Bangladesh Nationalist Party and the Awami League, which currently holds office, integrated Islam into their nationalist ideologies?
Well, yes, Bangladesh since its birth, not since its birth, especially after the assassination of the father of the nation, Bangabandhu Sheikh Mujibur Rahman, the two parties has been in power in a consistently, like the Nationalist Party and Awami League. And the Nationalist Party definitely the choose. One of the principle of this party is absolute faith and trust in Allah. There's the God in Islam. So definitely they choose the Islamic side. But on the other hand, as I mentioned earlier, the Bangladesh Awami League has a long history of becoming a secular party. But these days, this party's position is a bit ambiguous with regard to their current activities. You know, the currently, this party has a strong relationship with the Hefazat Islam. Hefazat Islam means the protector of Islam. They call it's a non-political organization. It's a kind of social party, but definitely the all leaders of the Hefazat Islam, they all come from the different Islamic groups. So in that sense, it's not a non-political organization. And we all know about 2013, the 13 point demands for the Hefazat. And these demands is almost looks like transforming Bangladesh into a Talibanized Bangladesh. So in that sense, and since the 2013 incidents, actually this Bangladesh, the current government or the Bangladesh Awami League's relationship with this religious group is very strong. And also at the same time, it also keep relationship with the leftist organizations. So it's a bit ambiguous position for the Bangladesh Awami League at the moment.
Thank you for that. I wanted to delve a little bit more into some of the things that you said about the religious parties. So it's no surprise that sort of mainstream, as you pointed out with those 13 points, that mainstream religious parties, let alone the more militant fundamentalist groups in the country, oppose a secular Bangladesh. How has the current political regime balanced Islamic pressures and secular expectations? And how has political Islam in Bangladesh developed?
Okay, you know, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, that the balancing between the right and the left, and Awami League has been doing it very successfully. Initially, when this government came to power, basically the most of their alliances with the left-wing political parties. And we have seen up to 2014 or 2018 election, there was ministers from Bangladesh Communist Party, Bangladesh other communist parties. But after 2018 election, we don't see any minister from the communist parties. And actually the transformation is now this Bangladesh Awami League, as well as this government, is leaning towards the religious parties. And you can ask why this is happening in the country, because, you know, at the moment, in the last two elections in 2014 and in 2018, actually, there is no opposition party in the country. And that vacancy is, I would say, is little bit fulfilled by this religious group. And this religious group now dictating what to do, what not to do. So virtually, this group has become a virtual, I would say, not in the political context. This group has become actually has replaced the opposition role. So actually, this at the moment, we can't see any balance, but we can see that this government is actually the favoring the Islamist groups. I can give you some example. Look at the 2018 Digital Security Act. It has the hurting religious sentiment. They have introduced that act, and that gives the 10 years imprisonment for anyone in hurting religious sentiment, because it was one of the demand of the Hifazat Islam. And the secondly, look at the Hifazat Islam, how the Qaumi madrasas, they previously they did not have get any recognition from the government, but this government has given that Qaumi Daura degree as equivalent to the master's degree. So, and even this government is going to establish almost 600 model mosque. So to improve the Islamic culture, to propagate the Islam. So yes, this is how, and if you talk about the political Islam, it has a legacy in the country. Actually, I need to delve into more into the history a little bit. Actually, Bangladesh was emerged as a secular state. But in 1997, when Jiaur Rahman came to the power, actually he pulled the ban on religion-based politics. So that's, and that really, and he built a strong relationship with the Middle East countries, because you know that after 1973, when the oil was discovered in Middle East, actually they started funding the Muslim countries. So Bangladesh in order to attract the foreign investment, especially from the Middle East, they pulled the ban on religion-based politics, as well as at that time, they received a huge funding from the Middle East countries. And especially since the early 1980s, that the political Islamic groups started growing in the country. And at the same time, not only the political Islamists, but also the extremist groups, they started operating during the same time in the early 1980s, basically. So, and the subsequent military government after 1991, they supported the Islamization process. Like, they declared Islam as a state religion in 1988, and then they started using, you know, the President Ashraf, he was a military dictator, and he used to attend the Friday prayer in the National Mosque. And this is how actually the higher Islam or the political Islam got leverage. So that's the basically the founding period for the political Islam in Bangladesh. And political Islamists, they have the historical inspiration as well. Look at, they always put reference to the works of the Haji Shariatullah, what he did in the early 19th centuries. So they have the historical inspiration from Haji Shariatullah Titumir, the fighting against the colonialists. And as well as the 1980s got them a very good reason to develop their political ideologies in the country. And the subsequent, when the democracy was restored in the country in 1991, that alliance, that coalition politics actually made them kingmakers, you know, because none of the party were receiving the majority in the parliament. So small Islamic groups like Jamaat-e-Islami and the coalition politics and the electoral politics actually made them kingmakers in the country.
I see what you mean when you say that there's a historical dimension to the decisions of Bangladesh's political leaders, and that there is also an international connection with the discovery of oil and the economic factors related to that. And I found fascinating also what you said about the fact that there is also a political space now for these religious parties. But I wanted to view my next question to a more sociological dimension. And I wanted to ask, religious extremism often poses significant challenges for social cohesion, national integration in lots of countries. So for example, in Pakistan, you had, you know, the Islamization program sort of creating numerous issues of the rise of sectarianism and other movements. How have religious minorities fared in an Islamizing Bangladesh?
There were reports of harassment of Hindus, including killing, rape, looting, and torture, especially related to the post-election violence. So violence against the minority groups is also not a new phenomenon in Bangladesh. According to a study, around 11 million Hindus left Bangladesh between 1964 and 2013 due to religious persecution and discrimination. And according to recent data, that Hindu Mahajot is the alliance of the minority groups, in 2019, Hindus faced a total 683 attacks across the country, in which over 30,000 people of religious minority group were affected. So this shows that how minority groups are being treated in the country. But I would say that look at the India's policy, the state policy against the minority group, but it's still in the state policy level, the state is still, there is no direct policy that affects the minorities. But I would say the exodus of minorities is attached to more psychological and economical. Look, I mentioned the psychological. Recently, when there was a satiric cartoon published in the in France, so a youth from the minority group, he posted a group, he supported that cartoon, and that is why his family and his houses were burned down. So, I mean, it's psychological in that sense that they don't feel secure, and especially during this time of the growth of transnational militant group, and they very often target these minority groups. So we have several Hindu priests and Buddhist priests were attacked and killed. And actually, this is a huge psychological pressure for them. So they might feel that this is not the country for us. So from that pressure, actually, and I talked to several minority people of minority group, they said, okay, the attack is not that level. The scale, the attack level is not so high. But actually, even if one incident happened, and this puts a serious psychological pressure on us, so that restrict us to talk, that restrict us to our free movement. So in that sense, yes, this is the recent growth of extremism in the country is a serious threat for the minority groups.
I guess extremism raises, and in an Islamizing Bangladesh, it raises questions about belonging. I think that's a good way to my final question for you. To what extent is Islamist extremism a danger for Bangladesh and for South Asian security more broadly? And who are gravitating towards extremism in the country today, in your opinion?
That's a good question. Actually, if you see the recent trend in the militancy in the country, previously, it was our popular perception or the research findings that the madrasa education is the madrasa breeds extremism, poverty causes extremism, and deprivation also causes extremism. These three causes were very popular. But when the holy artisan attack happened in the country, we saw almost for the first time that the youths, not only youths from the madrasas, but also youths from the middle class and upper class, they have also committed suicide in that attack. So actually, and there are a lot of studies that not only madrasa student, but the youths with urban background and urban and secular background, they are getting gravitated to the militancy. And a recent study found that nearly 70% students, militants, they are from secular institutions. Like they never been to madrasas. And of course, this is, we are living at the age of global village technology. And this radicalization is happening online. And most of them are radicalized online because, you know, the middle class and upper class, they have the access to the online. And so they are being radicalized because their involvement in the cyber world. Especially if you look during this coronavirus pandemic, we are actually forced to go online. most of our universities in the country, they are going online. So now our youths, in our country, nearly 50% of the educated youths, they don't have the job. 50% educated youths, they don't have job. So even these youths, these days, they don't have any job. They have the huge time to spend online. And the extremist narratives are actually, especially the idea of the caliphate, that actually attracting more and more youths. And obviously, this is not only a threat for Bangladesh. You may have heard that a Bangladeshi origin organization, Jamaatul Mujahideen Bangladesh, they have opened a Jamaatul Mujahideen India branch. So that means a homegrown organization is trying to become a transnational organization. So that's you can see that they're expanding the network, not only in Bangladesh, now they're entering into the India. And to some extent, look at the narrative of Al-Qaeda these days. And due to the Muslim, anti-Muslim law in India, that actually strengthened the narrative of the Al-Qaeda. They're talking about the Ghazwatul Hind. So this is how our educated youths are getting gravitated to the militant ideology. And this is not only threat for the Bangladesh, this is threat for the whole South Asian region, because now they are trying to expand their network beyond boundary.
Dr. Shafi, thank you for joining us today and sharing your thoughts. I think you've left us with a lot to think about. You are listening to South Asia Chat. If you wish to learn more about our work, please visit us at http://isas.nus.edu.sg. Thank you.
Thank you very much.